This is All of It. I'm Kusha Navidar in for Allison Stewart. Thanks for spending this beautiful Monday with us. It's beautiful, you're beautiful, and I'm grateful you're hanging out with us for a couple hours. On today's show, artist Mary Loveless O'Neill has a new solo exhibition and is included in the 2024 Whitney Biennial. She joins us to discuss along with gallery owner Marianne Boesky. Actors Hoa Shonde and Fred Nguyen Khan are here. They are starring in the new HBO adaptation of The Sympathizer. And we have author Katie Wen, who joins us to discuss her new novel, You Know What You Did. That's the plan, so let's get this started with Who Ate Where, a social history of the city told entirely through its restaurants. Most of us in New York, well, we live in small spaces. And so instead of staying in, we go out. And often we hang out in our city's restaurants. New Yorkers have been doing it for hundreds of years. And this dynamic has created a restaurant culture that's unique. I mean, is there any better dining experience than meeting people out in New York on a Friday night? You've got your 24-hour spots, the historic institutions downtown, the buzz of eaters in and around Broadway right after the curtain closes, or that hole in the wall around the corner that secretly has the best food in the city. New York Magazine's new yesteryear issue is a history of iconic New York restaurants, many of which are now closed. That history is told through the people who frequented those restaurants, either as diners or as servers. And with me now to take your calls is New York Magazine food editor Alan Sitzma. The magazine's latest issue is called Who Ate Where? A Social History of the City Told Entirely Through Its Restaurants. Alan, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you so much for having me. Happy to be here.
And listeners, give us a call if you've got a restaurant from a past era of New York that you just loved. You can call or text us now at 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. Or you can DM us on social, on Instagram, on X. We're at All of It WNYC. If you've got a favorite story from when you were in a restaurant, maybe a celebrity sighting or a server you always enjoyed interacting with, or a place where you felt like you really belonged, give us that story. We're at 212-433-9692. Let's talk about the article, Alan. So every year, New York Magazine comes out with what you call a yesteryear issue. Why did you want this year's issue to focus on the restaurants of New York?
We pick a topic every single year. Last year, it was the It Girls, for example. So this issue celebrates our anniversary for the magazine, and it's a chance to just look back on the city's history. A year ago, about 10 months ago, we had done a story about the Quilted Giraffe. Adam Platt, our former restaurant critic, now features writer, wrote it, talked to the chef, got these amazing photos like Madonna sitting on the pass at the restaurant, talking about kind of the wild nights and the food. We had no reason to do it other than we wanted to just take readers inside a restaurant that doesn't exist anymore, that, you know, try to evoke the spirit of being there. Mm-hmm. And we loved it. So with the yesteryear issue coming up, we sort of said, what if we did a whole issue about old restaurants? And that was kind of as far as we took it until January, when we realized that we were going to actually have to do it and put it together. And we thought, okay, what does this look like? Are we going to talk about dishes? Are we going to talk about chefs? Are we going to talk about the restaurants that you've heard about 100 times? Are we only going to talk about places you haven't heard about at all? So from there, we really started doing a ton of research. I have like 10 spreadsheets that just got wasted, that never got used. And we realized that what we really wanted to focus on was, like you said, the people and the scenes inside of these restaurants. And from there, it almost became, you know, less of a food story, less of a restaurant story, and really just a story about the city's history, which is what we always want the issue to be anyway.
And your point there about including focusing on the people, I think, is the real interesting part of the whole article. I mean, it's pages upon pages of different people's perspectives. Why did you want to focus on the people through restaurants?
You know what it was? We were doing a lot of research. We were looking back at the history of restaurants. At one time, it was going to be like the hottest restaurant of every year for a century. And we were sort of not getting where we wanted it to be, if that makes sense, which is sort of standard for any one of these big magazine packages. And our photo team had done a ton of research. We were sitting down looking at everything, and they had found this picture of Mark Twain at Delmonico's celebrating his 70th birthday in 1905. And there was something that grabbed everybody. We wanted to learn more about the night. We wanted to learn more about the party. It's this very stiff photo. If you see it, it's in the magazine, and it's, you know, who knows how long they were sitting there even to get the shot. But once we started to think about like, oh yeah, we should learn about that night, we should learn about that party, that's when it really started to take off and click for us that we should do it across the city, and we should really be talking about the scenes. And we should be talking about the nights and the parties and the fun that people were having. And that photo is what unlocked it for us.
So that was the germ of the idea that actually spread out to make the whole article itself. Is that right?
Exactly. And then you can open it up beyond, you know, food writers and restaurant writers. We have obviously a huge network of culture writers and people who are experts in the city's history. So we could ask them, we could say, here's our idea. We don't really want it to be about food. We want it to be just about people. So do you remember special nights? I mean, we got so many contributions to that end of writers who were just there and had lived through it. And just what is a part of the city's history that fascinates you that we should be telling readers about?
It's really a social history, too. I mean, one of the things that I found super interesting when I was looking through the pages was the focus on the punk scene, where punks would eat, particularly in the East Village. Can you tell us about that a little bit?
I mean, that's what's so great is we were talking about, okay, where were people eating? Let's talk about neighborhoods. Let's talk about eras. And we think about, okay, East Village punks, everybody has to eat somewhere. And so A7, this huge, you know, seminal hardcore club had opened. There is a Greasy Spoon across the street, Leshko's, and there is a macrobiotic, kosher, vegan health food restaurant called The Cauldron. And so then these pieces of the puzzle start to come together, and we're like, well, we should talk to people who went to both of these places. We should get the different scenes. Our writer, Chris Crowley, found a source named Willie Luncheonette, who had been a member of the hardcore scene. And you just realize that there's going to be so much color and, you know, experience from this that you never even think about, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So we've heard a few of the restaurants that you mentioned in the article, a few of the things. If you're just joining us, we're talking to Alan Sitzma. He's the New York Magazine food editor. And their yesteryear issue just came out, and it's celebrating all of the iconic restaurants of New York's yesteryear, but specifically through the experiences of the people who ate there, the celebrities, the servers, the staff, and just people in the city. If you've got a restaurant that evokes that feeling for you, a place that you used to love that just isn't open anymore, a place where you felt like a regular, give us a call. And quick shout out to all of our listeners. We love callers, and we need callers who are not driving. So if you're driving right now and you have an idea, do me a favor, just pull over to the side and give us a call without being in a moving vehicle. But if you have an idea of a restaurant, give us a call. We're at 212-433-9692. And we've got a couple callers right now, Alan, so let's bring them down. Let's hear from Katie in Larchmont. Hey, Katie, what's the restaurant for you?
Hi, Goldberg's Pizza. It was on 53rd Street and 2nd Avenue. I think they lost their lease in the first round of kind of high rises that, you know, kind of went up around 1st Avenue, 2nd Avenue in that area. They had a pizza called the Smod Pizza. It was like deep dish, cast iron pan, pepperoni, sausage, green onion, and green onion, pepperoni, whatever it was, like 25 years later, I still think about that pizza.
And they specialized in deep dish specifically, you're saying, Katie?
Yeah. It was awesome.
Oh,
unfortunately,
wow.
I didn't get to become a regular because they closed not too long after I started working in the area, but it was amazing.
Well, shout out to Goldberg's, and thanks so much for that call, Katie. Let's hear from Al in New Jersey. Hey, Al, welcome to the show.
Hi, great. Thank you. You know, when I was about 10 years old, my grandfather, who came from Naples, lived in Cleveland. Every time he came to visit us in New York, we went to the Grotto Azzurra, the Blue Grotto, a restaurant in Little Italy, where my grandfather never spoke Italian, spoke Italian to the owner, and we always drank, as little kids even, peaches and wine. It was the most amazing, these voluptuous peaches and wine, fabulous Italian food. And it was just an event.
Oh, that's lovely, yeah. Al. Wonderful. Thank you so much for calling. And let's hear from Susan in Connecticut. Hey, Susan, what's the restaurant for you?
Hey, I love the article, by the way. But I wanted to tell you about a restaurant that I think is a throwback from way back when called Jean's on 6th Avenue and 11th Street. And we discovered it in 2013 on Halloween night where we couldn't get close to 6th Avenue to see the parade. And we looked to our right, and there was Jean's. And we went in, one of those down, like, three stairs down below, and sat at the bar. And we ended up having a fabulous evening with all these locals. So the next year, we went back. And we went in, we sat at the bar, and the amazing bartender served our drinks without even asking us what we wanted. And we turned left and right, and the same people were sitting at the bar. And it was just, it's been magical. We've gone every single year.
Oh, Susan, that's a lovely story. Thank you so much for calling. We're getting a lot of calls in. If you want to share your story, you can text us or call us. We're at 212-433-9692. Alan, we just had three callers. Any of the restaurants that they mentioned, were you familiar with them?
Jean's is still open. Jean's is a favorite. We actually had a writer who was lamenting the loss of Cafe Lou when it closed because he used to go for martinis and French fries. And so he would scour the city for us, looking for a new haunt that he wanted to find for this martini, French fry, just after work, talking with friends. Jean's was the place that he landed because of this bartender who remembers every order. The second you walk in, he said he had been there like 10 years earlier, and the bartender immediately remembered him, served him the same martini, ready to go.
10 years?
I might be misremembering, but it's something along there. But I want to go back to what Al from New Jersey said, talking about the restaurant. He started with his grandpa. He started with that scene. And that's the kind of nostalgia that we wanted the whole issue to evoke, this idea of, like, I'm there with these people that I know.
Mm. How about for you? Is there any restaurant in the city that you'd consider yourself a regular at or something that you really miss?
I really miss WD-50, which was on the Lower East Side and was a very experimental restaurant, sort of at the height of the modernist gastronomy movement. And I think it sort of got lumped in with a lot of places that maybe weren't as good. But the chef was just so willing to take these huge, wild swings with his food. And you'd go in, there was always like a cook or a chef from out of town sitting at the bar, checking out, seeing what's happening. And there was such a welcoming feeling of hospitality. And then you would get the foie gras terrine that like bled beet juice when you cut it open or something like that. And it was just like an incredible restaurant. I've probably, you know, I went 100 times before it closed and I still wish it were there.
Mm. We're talking to Alan Sitzma, who's a New York Magazine food editor, and he's here to speak about the magazine's newest issue celebrating the social history of New York's restaurants and specifically the people who frequented them. And like Alan said, the article is about evoking the sense of nostalgia, the sense of like what New York was and how we ate and how we collected in those spaces. And listeners, we're taking your calls if you have a restaurant like that for you, a place where you felt like you were a regular, a place that maybe isn't open anymore. If you've got a story for us or a memory, just give us a call. We're at 212-433-9692, or you can message us on social. We're at All of It WNYC. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to take more of your calls. We're going to go into more of the stories. We're going to talk a little bit more about the restaurants that we love. This is All of It. We'll be right back. This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Kusha Navidar, and we're talking to Alan Sitzma, who's a New York Magazine food editor, and we're talking about the magazine's yesteryear issue, which just came out, and celebrating the social history of New York's restaurants. And we're taking your calls about restaurants that you loved and maybe you felt like you were a regular at. And we're also talking about the stories in the article of those iconic stories from Mark Twain to many others. So listeners, we're going to take your calls calls. We're going to read your texts. If you want to talk to us, give us a shout. We're at 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. Alan, we are getting so many wonderful texts. I'm just going to rattle off a few. So these are from listeners who are texting us. One says, Odessa on Avenue A was everything. I miss it. Another, Angelica's Kitchen at the 12th Street location. My colleague Kate, who's in the control room now, loves Angelica's Kitchen. Just want to give her a shout out. We've got another text that reads, not only did I dine at Florent on Gainsvort Street, sorry if I messed that up, I worked there for 7 years. It was really fun, full of the amazing people I worked with, unique, plus Florent himself, the endless flow of drag queens and celebrities, Bette Midler, Johnny Depp, Leo DiCaprio, Whoopi, RuPaul, and so many more. Those were amazing days, and they ended their historic run with the Five Stages of Grief, 5 fabulous shows to mourn the end of Florent's fantastic era. It also says, call me for a story that can't be told on air, which I'm very intrigued about. I don't know if that's possible to get, but listeners, as you can see, we're getting a lot of calls in, a lot of texts in. And Alan, you know, we're getting all these signals. I just got to say, do you think this is something special about New York City? I mean, not to say that, you know, it can't happen anywhere else, but it seems like it's such a trove of stories. What do you think it is about the city that makes that?
I think you kind of hit the nail on the head when you kicked this off and you said that we live in tiny spaces. We take restaurants as they become more than just places to go eat for us. We work there, we live there, our kitchens don't work, you know, we want to be seen. And, you know, in looking at the history of restaurants, it was really interesting to see that New York was really not the gourmet capital of the world. It was Paris that really focused on the gastronomy. And here it was, you know, taverns, everybody's eating, you know, bread and beer and beef and getting their jobs done, really. And I think underneath it all, we're still sort of that tavern town where no matter how much you gussy it up, these are still places where we need to live, and they become sort of, you know, third space is the phrase. And that's what we found over and over and over with these packages, or with these restaurants, sorry, in this package, is that that's what everybody remembers. They remember that sense of like calm and that feeling of just like knowing that you were in a home, even if you were inside a restaurant. And that, I think, is very unique to New York.
Which part of it? The calm is unique, or the sense of being
at home?
The
feeling that these are extensions of our homes. I mean, you can go to a lot of other cities in America, around the world, and obviously there are wonderful restaurants everywhere. But this idea that we really live in them feels so unique to New York.
Absolutely. Well, let's hear from some more callers. We've got Eddie in Manhattan. Hi, Eddie. What's that restaurant for you?
Hi, thanks. It was called the Belmore Cafeteria. I think it was on Park or Madison on 28 between 27th Street. My family emigrated from Palestine in 1959, and we had to stay at the Prince George Hotel, which was on 28th Street. And it was a very popular hotel with the airlines. So I got to fall in love with the Pan Am stewardesses. And it was a great place. And, you know, they would go to the Belmore Cafeteria, and I would tell my mother, you know, could we go there? Because I wanted to see the pilots. I wanted to be a pilot. I thought it was so romantic and beautiful. And I said, I really do love New York. And that cafeteria-style place no longer exists. And then we did find an apartment after a couple of months, and we went to Brooklyn. And lo and behold, there was one more cafeteria-style place that reminded me of Belmore. It was called the Bickford, where Atlantic Avenue, the stadium is now, the basketball stadium. And so I think those are of another era. I don't know of any other place like them. And, you know, it was just amazing, especially the Belmore. I think with the clientele of the pilots and that romance of it. I was a boy, and I really
that's wonderful, Eddie.
Thing.
Thank you so much for that call. Shout out to the Belmore. Let's go to Lee in Garrison. Hi, Lee. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you so much. I'm just loving listening to everybody's memories. So for me, growing up in Queens in the 60s, my grandfather, Conrad Lubel, was the head waiter at many, many famous places. But I'm going to focus on two, Luchow's. Luchow's on 14th Street, when you walked in that bar and had 3-story high glass ceiling, that they knocked that down, it was next to the Palladium, is a real crime. But they had something called the Diamond Jim Brady Room, and I would love to hear your speaker talk to that. And the other thing is, he also worked at a place called the Auto Pub. You went and you sat in autos, or you went in the back and you watched a movie in banquettes like you were in a car. And this was in the GM building underneath where FAO Schwartz is right now. And that is where he met the Beatles.
Wow. Lee, thank you so much for that. Alan, a lot of wild restaurants, not wild restaurants, just wild stories, wild memories. Did you recognize any of those?
Lou Chow's actually came up a lot in conversation as we were putting the issue together. And we just, you know, we would always sort of come back to the same question, which was the who. Who are the characters that we're going to tell the story? So Lou Chow's was open forever. It was enormous. And there was just so much to talk about that we felt like we couldn't actually pack it into 200 words. We obviously couldn't include everywhere. And we just had to sort of, you know, focus on the people and the who. It just became self-selecting in that way, too. You could really, like, identify where the stories were going to work.
I was reading this article with my colleague Luke, who's a producer on all of it, and we both kind of walked away with a similar feeling, which was, man, I miss an era of New York that I never actually lived in. And I wonder if that was an aim, like that sense of nostalgia that you're talking about, or even did you just feel that yourself when you looked at this when it was finally published?
Absolutely. We wrote about, I mean, it's a famous restaurant called Maxwell's Plum. And it was just, a big restaurant in the 70s when I think people were like a little more open about their indiscretions. And it was a big single scene. They would lock the door when there were too many people crowding around the bar so nobody could get in or out. There were stories of streakers and, you know, it was just like lots of sex and lots of energy and lots of partying. And places like that just, you know, they don't exist anymore. And it just sounds like this wild restaurant where you could get a chili dog or frog's legs. And everyone was just there kind of crammed in together. And it seems, I don't know, just wild. It's the one place where I was like, it would have been nice to just spend a night there.
Yeah. You know, looking at the restaurant cultural history written about in this issue and thinking about the restaurant scene in New York today, I'm super curious from your perspective as a food editor, what's something from this issue that you wish still existed in the restaurant scene? And what's maybe a good change or innovation in today's culture that maybe didn't exist back then?
I mean, the thing that I think has happened now, obviously, is that with the explosion of like digital reservations, there is much more kind of like hype around the new place. And from week one to week two to week three, people go from restaurant to restaurant to restaurant. And it's really hard. You talk to these chefs and the owners, and it's really hard for them to generate a community of regulars who are going to stay at the restaurant. You know, they're trying to get the neighbors, trying to get people to stay before they, you know, their attention wanders to the next place. And I feel like that is just missing. Restaurants don't have the time for financial reasons, you know, media reasons. I'm probably partially to blame for this, but, you know, they don't have the year, the 2 years, the 3 years to really build that network of regular customers that creates a scene like you have at, you know, La Côte Basque or Maxwell's Plum or, Max's Kansas City, which isn't in the magazine, but we wrote about online. Just places where people can get together and know that it's always going to be there.
What do you think is something that is great about today that you didn't maybe see exist back then?
I do think the food is probably better. I mean, it, you know, there isn't a lot of food in this issue, but every time we encountered it, we often thought, well, okay, I think it's probably even restaurants that maybe aren't at the top tier of the, you know, gourmet rankings. I think the food is probably still better now than it was back then.
Absolutely. You know, we're getting a bunch of calls. We're talking to Alan Sitzma, who is the New York Magazine food editor. He's here to speak about the magazine's new issue that's celebrating the social history of New York's restaurants. We're taking your calls. We're getting your texts. I'm going to read out a few more texts because there's just so many. I'm going to go through all these. And listeners, it's really a delight to hear all of these. So here's one. It's the Cedar Bar on 10th Street University Place in Greenwich Village. At least from the 50s onward, it was a great hangout for every artist you could possibly think of. You could meet Kooning, Pollock, John Schuyler, Jack Kerouac. It was a great jazz bar. It's been closed for years. Another one that reads, there was this bar called Klimat, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, in the East Village on 7th Street. And at the time, my friends and I would hang out often, eight people deep at a time. And that restaurant had room for us all on these couches, and we drink good beer and have French fries. Another text, huge shout out to the bartenders at PJ Clark's Lincoln Center. They take care of all of us from the Metropolitan Opera. Not so much about the food, but Mike, Christian, Julie, and Connor know how to take care of their people. Alan, I'm hearing a lot about that third space element that you're talking about. Do you think that third space element exists as strongly as it did back then? It just kind of looks different? Or do you think in New York City, we've kind of moved away from restaurants and found more diversity in the places that we hang out?
I think it definitely still exists. I mean, everybody has these spots in their neighborhoods. Everybody gets so excited when like a really good place opens near them, because then there's potential, you know? And I've been asked a lot about kind of what it means to be a real regular versus just somebody who shows up a lot. And I think in putting this together, what I realized was that to be there's this idea of being a regular that you're contributing something to the restaurant just by being there. They're happy to have you there, whether that's, you know, maybe you're just a whale and you spend a lot of money and that makes them happy, or maybe your personality is such that, you know, you light up the dining room when you're there. Whatever it is, you as a customer are providing so much of what this restaurant really is that is all part of this third space idea as well.
And you think that still exists? Like if you go into a restaurant and light up a room, it's still possible to make that kind of connection, that community?
Absolutely. I think there is that connection. There is that community. And, you know, you talk about Jeans. Jeans isn't going anywhere. Mm-hmm. And it's the same people who are sitting at the bar, the same bartender. So this sense of community, it absolutely still exists here. You just have to kind of, you know where it is. And it's hard for us. I mean, this magazine was so fun to work on because we are so into here's the new, here's what you should go try, here's what we're excited about, that to take a step back and to look at what was not new was almost refreshing in a way for us.
So you have all of these restaurants. I'm sure there were some that you'd already heard about, like Delmonico's probably already knew about it. I'm sure there were some that you learned through making this spread. Do any come to mind where you think, oh, I really wish that I could go back and visit that restaurant, either for the story or for the dynamic that it described, for you yourself?
In the package?
Yeah.
I mean, certainly Maxwell's Plum, and I think probably there was a restaurant called the Forum of the Twelve Caesars in Midtown that was kind of the early, you know, before the Four Seasons. This was the first, you know, big Roman-themed gladiator restaurant that I think that our writer in pitching it, this wasn't in the piece, but he called it, you know, the pinnacle of Midtown madness in the 60s. And I mean, who doesn't want to just spend a day seeing what that feels like?
Now, we've got this New York City of yesteryear in the article. We've got the New York of today. The only thing you can say about New York is that it's always changing, right? And a lot of the restaurants featured here end with a closure of some kind, either because the rent was raised or the building came into new management and the restaurant was closed. How do you think the changing landscape of New York, I'm talking like the gentrification of its neighborhoods, other elements, how do you think that factors into how we engage in this fun and rich restaurant history of a past New York when we're reading the article itself?
There's a spread. There's actually a photo in the issue that it's a father and son just eating French fries at a burger stand in the Albee Square Mall, which is now where City Point stands. And it is such just a regular weekday after school moment that you see it. And I think, oh, there's just a giant condominium and mall complex there where this is happening. That, more than anything else in the issue, for some reason, that photo just feels like the ghost of New York past to me, that it evokes a time when this mall existed right in downtown Brooklyn. And you can just see the passage of time most clearly through what was there and what is there now. Mm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, how would you describe that ghost of New York past in that case?
I mean, I don't know if it's good or bad. It's just that, like you said, New York is always changing and it can't be stuck in the past. And, you know, it's just what was fun about working on the issue is that we just got to revisit some of these moments in time and to, you know, hopefully explain to readers why we thought that they were exciting or fascinating or important in some way.
A big part of that for me was this idea of celebrity that's in New York City's dining culture that I think is probably a bit different than in other cities around the country and around the world. Can you talk about that a little bit? Why celebrities seem to rely so much on restaurants in New York City? How that goes into the article itself?
Well, if you're a celebrity, you want to be seen, right? You want to be out. You want to be where the party is. You want to be where the action is, and you're going to get treated really well. We actually had a writer named Ben, whose only assignment on this whole project was to call as many different celebrities as possible and to ask them about restaurants that they love. And we said, cast as wide a net as possible. And the people that ended up in the issue, you know, we have Fat Joe talking about Jimmy's Bronx Cafe and the time that the Yankees were banned from going there because the team thought that they were spending too much time there. We have Julia Fox talking about the restaurant that she would go to before she went to Max Fish just because she knew the owner. She was 15. She could eat as much as possible without them charging her. And so you do see this really wide net. And, you know, it all goes back to just being seen. If you're a celebrity in a dining room, here's the public. They're going to love you. And, you know, what's better than that?
Well, the food as well.
Sometimes.
Yeah. We've been talking to Alan Sitzma. He's the New York Magazine food editor, and he was here to talk to us about the magazine's new Yesteryear issue, which celebrated the social history of New York's restaurants. We took your calls, and thank you so much for all the calls and all the texts. And Alan, thank you so much for this article.
Thank you for having me.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.